Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 48 for February 8th, 2008, Microsoft's Cardboard Box. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audiblepodcasts.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly 48. And boy, there's a lot to talk about. Mostly, let's talk about me, Paul Thurrott.
Awesome. Okay.
Paul Thurrott is here. He is the host of Windows Weekly. Of course, the creator of the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com.
But enough about me, Leo. What do you think?
And I got the red ring of death, and I'm unhappy.
This is an indoctrination into a very, very unspecial club.
I thought I was special. So it's a good thing I got the orange box for PS3. That's all I could say, or I'd really be unhappy.
Yeah.
Because I've been playing the orange box. I had something to do.
I don't know if you've played Portal yet.
I love Portal.
Okay, so I've actually finished. I finished all the...
I'm at level 18, and I'm stuck at the last... How do you get up to that top ledge there?
I can't, off the top of my head, I could...
Is
there a level 18?
The top level is 19. The second to last level. And it was a tough one. You know, and it's the one where they have that thing that moves out, and then you sneak around it, and there's all these people shooting at you, and you have to go back and figure out a way to get every one of those laser... A gun.
Oh yeah, things. Actually, I think I do remember this level.
Yeah, and now you got rid of them all, and then you've got a really ridiculous double shot to get the ball has to go through, come out, and then you quickly have to shoot and jump in and press the button. And I did
it's
that.
It's funny. I'm not good at certain things. You know, math. I'm not good at. And I look at a game like Portal, and I think I'm not going to be good at this. And I'm actually pretty good at Portal. But the one thing I never mastered. It was just sort of a trial error thing, was the, you'd have to throw a hole as you were in the air, and then it would catapult you a long distance thing. I am horrible at that.
So what do? You get your son to do that?
No, I can totally visualize what you have to do, but I have to just keep trying again and
it's
again.
Hard,
so
yeah.
For example, one thing I latched onto immediately was if you look at the achievements on the Xbox 360 version, one of the achievements is, fall 30,000 feet. And I said, oh, this is going to be simple. You just put a hole in the ceiling, hole in the ground, jump in. If you line it up right, you'll just keep falling. And I literally, the thing's sitting there, and the guy's face, like, falling through the hole. And the doorbell rang, and the pizza guy came. And I'm paying the guy, and I hear the thing go, bloop, and it's there it is. And I came in, and
you
I had the
achievement.
The achievement. But the one I can't get is I haven't gotten, and I, you know, now I'm kind of past it, so I'm not sure I'll go back and do it, but there's a similar achievement where you have to go for a long distance. And what that involves is, you know, I think is you in the air
shooting,
making
yourself
a hole every single time.
Right.
And I'm just not coordinated in that way. You know,
good game. I mean, I love the game.
Well, have you seen the song at the end? Or have
it's and we're not going to do any spoilers, kids. Don't worry.
Yeah,
Jonathan Coulter wrote a song, and it's actually I've played it on YouTube. But you have to go through the game before it means much to you.
It's beautiful, and if you're familiar with the Half-Life games too, there's some nice references to the Half-Life stuff in the song, and the song's great. It's actually a great song, but it's a funny, funny song, especially if you've been playing Portal and you've
done
it
all the way through. Yeah,
yeah, the humor of the female computer who's going insane a little bit, and it's great.
It's a really wonderful game, and I love it because you're not killing anybody. There's you know,
10 minutes into our discussion about video games on.
We could do that once in a while.
That's okay.
We could do that. But anyway, so Microsoft is sending me an empty cardboard box, and you probably don't. This is what normal people get.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, actually, so the empty cardboard box will at least be quieter and.
Right. It won't be as much fun for gaming, but it'll be much
that
quieter.
Red light problem.
Yeah, no thermal problems. No, I'm going to put my Xbox in the empty cardboard box, send it to Microsoft. I think they pretend to fix it. You can't fix this. But anyway,
I don't believe that they.
I think they just throw it in a pile somewhere and give you a new one.
Yeah. Your Xbox will show up again later at someone else's house as sort of a refurbished unit that they replace someone else's with, you know.
So I've been doing a lot of reading, and I've seen some oddball fixes, which I wasn't about to try. Like Veronica Belmont says, you can wrap it in a towel.
What?
you actually heat it up even more. So you wrap it in a towel and run it. And I guess the idea. Well, the theory here is that the problem is bad solder. And that when it gets hot, it cracks. So you're reheating it, trying to re-solder? I don't know.
You know, I don't think that the problem is any one thing. I think it's a bunch of things. And what went wrong in your system, it's hard to say, right? Because it could be any of the things. So that may or may not have any bearing. I remember they used to make Atari computers that one of the fixes for it would you hold it about a foot over the table and drop it and what that would do is seat the chips Reseated, because they were so yeah, yeah. Atari was so cheap they wouldn't actually solder the chips into the sockets, you know.
That's a funny fix. I'm not going to try. You know, it's funny, when I call Microsoft, I talked to Jessica and she said, well, have you tried any diagnostics? And I said, well, like what, turning it off and on again? What?
Yeah, exactly.
One thing she suggested was remove the hard drive, so I did, still Red Ring of Death.
So remove the hard drive.
You can disconnect it, right?
I guess
if the hard drive had failed, maybe I would have gotten. But it's the three segment red ring, the general failure red ring. Doesn't go all the way around. So I'm pretty sure I got what everybody else has. It's like getting the flu. Like I got the cold after everybody else got it.
Yeah, I did. Actually, my daughter is at the hospital right now. She's getting checked for pneumonia. She's been sick all week.
Oh, poor little.
No, she's okay.
It's a bad cold.
It's been tough for.
So there is more news. There's real news. Enough about me.
But I will just add, if you're lucky and you never know, maybe you will get one of the newer units because the newer ones have better internals and so forth. And it might be a little quieter. It might be more reliable. So when you get that, see if you notice any difference, you know, with the sound output and so forth.
I will, because that's one of the things I didn't like is how noisy it is.
Yeah.
They did drop the price, though, on the HD DVD, like anybody would want one at this point.
Did you see? I wrote a post about that today. I said that if you're looking for a way to make your Xbox 360 even louder, this is a relatively inexpensive way to do that.
For $130 now, you can increase it to 100 decibels. No problem.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. Vista SP1. This, more seriously, Vista SP1 now is ready.
Oh, we're going to talk about Windows?
Windows. It's ready to manufacture. RTM, they say it's a RC2 that got approved.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been playing with it. You've got it. When, first of all, before you go on and on about how great and wonderful it is, when am I going to get it? When do the real people get it?
There's a mystery there, actually. I looked over they came out with a schedule. And the schedule is so convoluted. You have to sort of parse what they're saying to figure it out. I mean, they really don't explain it in a very quick way. No, I mean, they really don't. It's crazy.
So, it's not going to be out in this patch Tuesday. I thought maybe next patch Tuesday.
Right. No, I mean, there are some holes in the schedule that are unclear. And I actually wrote them and said, you haven't explained this. When is this coming? And they were very coy, you know? So, there are things like, obviously it's going to be on MSDN and TechNet. Obviously they're going to put it on Microsoft.com somewhere where people can go and download the full install version. So if you work for a company and you want to slipstream it into, the images that you've created, you know, they have these versions that you can download, except that they don't. Right. And they've never actually said when those are going to come out. So I don't know, I mean, they exist, but what they've said is that people who,
hardware incompatibility, right?
Yeah, there's more than, all right, maybe we should step back. Windows Vista Service Pack 1 and Windows Server 2008 are based on the same code base, right? You know, we've kind of talked about that before. So, I had reported probably 15, 16, 18 months ago, whatever it was, that these two products were going to ship side by side in the same day. And we know that Microsoft is going to launch Windows Server 2008 later this month in Los Angeles. So presumably Windows Server 2008 would RTM or, you know, be released to manufacturing before that date. And so that date was actually, it was last Friday, but they announced it on Monday. So surprisingly, they announced that Service Pack 1 was also ready on Monday, presumably because, the two products, again, they're kind of in lockstep, right?
Right.
But as it turns out, Service Pack 1 is in fact not technically ready.
Oh.
Because there are a certain class of drivers that are just incompatible with Service Pack 1, but they're not really saying what those things are. But I know from the people I've talked to that the drivers, a lot of them have to do with networking. You know, wireless networking, wired networking, some of them are very common Intel-type chipsets and so forth. So there's actually a pretty wide swath of customers who would have problems if they upgraded to Service Pack 1 right now. So what they're going to do is basically hold on to this thing. And then beginning in mid-March, they'll start putting it out on Windows Update. And what Windows Update will do is look at your system. And if you don't have one of these hardware devices in your system, mm-hmm. it will make it available as an optional install. If you do have one of those devices, you'll have to wait until mid-April.
Okay.
And in that month, you know, between now and say mid-April, they're apparently going to release updated drivers for those devices, ship those via Windows Update. Once you install the new drivers, then you'll be able to get Windows Vista Service Pack 1.
But here's the catch 22. You don't know what hardware it is.
Right.
So you won't know if you're one of the few.
Right. So you could kind of sit there on, you know, March 20th or whatever and click refresh, refresh, refresh. And if it doesn't show up, maybe that's why. I know, it's crazy. It's like, you know, what's behind door number one, Jim? So obviously there are other ways to acquire Service Pack 1. You could get it pre-installed in a new PC. Vaguely, they're saying in the coming months.
Someday.
That could be, you know, whatever. By Christmas, I would say. Retail copies of Windows Vista will be replaced by versions that include Service Pack 1, you know, integrated in there.
Oh, cool. When will that be? Also
in the coming months, you know, we don't know. the really curious, well, there are two other curious aspects to the schedule. Enterprise customers who are on Microsoft's volume licensing programs will get an integrated version of Vista and Service Pack 1 quite soon, apparently, on DVD. So they, I guess, are on their own. When it comes to the hardware, I'm not really sure, you know. Maybe they figure these guys aren't going to install it anyway. I'm not really sure what the theory is on that one. But and then international users, and by that I mean the initial version that they're shipping has five languages. So it's English, French, Spanish, German, and Japanese is what was RTM'd this past week. The remaining languages that they support, 30 something languages, I think it might be, will be released to manufacturing in April. And then those versions of Service Pack 1 will ship sometime after that. Does that answer your question?
No.
Not really.
All I want to know.
Oh, you want to know is when you're going to get
it. When I'm going to get it, and no one knows.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even Microsoft might know. So should I, now it'll happen automatically with Windows Update.
Like I said, I asked. I mean, when, you know, right. If you just wanted to go download this thing and install it, and the answer I got was, I'm almost tempted to look it up just so you can see how coy it was, but it was, they're going to let me know, I guess.
We'll let you know. Don't call us, we'll call you.
Well, it's almost like they, you know, they explained about 80% of the ways people will want to get this thing, and never mentioned the other 20%, and it was like a little game. We'll see if anyone noticed.
Right.
You know.
So what am I going to get if I get this? I mean, what is it?
Yeah.
Is it just a roll up of the patches, or is it more than that?
There are two ways to look at this. There are, in fact, thousands of changes in some ways, but they're all minor changes. You know, behind the scenes type changes. Right. So from a user experience standpoint, or from the standpoint of someone sitting down in front of the system and actually using it, there's really only a handful of changes that you'll notice right off the bat. Okay. You know, there's nothing dramatic.
Well, we mentioned the change in the reduced functionality mode.
Yeah. And actually I was just testing that. I just today, in fact, it just popped into it again. So, they changed Windows Genuine Advantage so that it works more like it did in XP. And actually it's much nicer. In fact, assuming you don't care about what's on the desktop, because the screen just, you know, it makes the desktop just a black color every hour. It just resets it. Really what they're doing is just popping up that familiar activate Windows Now balloon dialogue that comes up. You'd see, you know, in Windows anyway, but it comes up once an hour. And really that's about it. You know, the other big change is in sort of a non-activated state. If you've exceeded the activation, you know, timeout period. If you go into Windows Update, you'll also see an error message in there if you try to do anything that is unrelated to, say, critical security fixes. So if you try to download Ultimate Extras on mm-hmm. Windows Vista Ultimate Edition, you'll get a little error dialogue. But, you know, really, they've made it such that you can pretty much use this thing without activating it. You know, I mean, the annoyance is very minor. Hmm. So I'm kind of intrigued. But yes, this, if you go into Windows Update, it says, you may be a victim of software counterfeiting.
Hmm.
To use all of Windows features,
hmm.
to get the latest updates and to receive product support, your copy of Windows must be validated as genuine.
Or not.
Or you can just close it. There you go.
That's all you need. Yeah. How interesting. Well, obviously, they're doing that because of all the complaints and the whatever percentage of people who got false positives. I heard that the server was down again a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That could be it.
Somebody I know had an activation problem, called them. They said, we can't help you right now. The server's down again.
Well, you know, the only way to get rid of activation problems for good is going to be to get rid of activation. Yes. But this is way better than it was. I mean, it's not what I would, you know, what I would choose, but way better.
Now, we talked about this last time. I'm just going to say it again for those who didn't hear. A lot of people said, don't get Vista till Service Pack 1. I mean, that's kind of often the conventional wisdom on a new version of Windows.
Right.
Agree?
Well,
is it time to get Vista? For those who are waiting?
Yes, I think so. But I have to say that a lot of the reasons for that aren't so much tied to SP1 specifically as they are just to the passage of time. You know, so here we are about a year after the broad release of Vista. So the number of, you know, Windows logoed applications has risen dramatically, tenfold, literally, in a year. The number of compatible applications, compatible hardware devices have all gone up dramatically. Now, that stuff is not in SP1. You don't have to install SP1 to get that compatibility. It just occurs automatically. You know, that's one of the nice things about the whole Windows Update and the automatic updating scheme that Microsoft uses. You know, these types of things are delivered automatically. You know, Windows Vista Service Pack 1 comes with a lot of performance improvements, especially around file copy. File copy locally on the same computer, file copy over a network, file copy between this version of Windows and other versions of Windows have all been improved fairly dramatically. Some of those fixes are available outside of Service Pack 1. Some actually are specific to Service Pack 1, but, you know, overall, I don't think that's a huge deal. So I guess I would just say that it is time, but I don't know that Service Pack 1 is necessarily the reason. This is very much an evolution. Most of it is, you know, fit and finish type stuff behind the scenes, you know, reliability, performance, compatibility improvements, that kind of stuff. Functionally, it really hasn't changed dramatically. You know, you can point to little things here and there. They fixed, you know, the disk defragmenter. They made BitLocker drive encryption a little more powerful, that sort of thing. But overall, you know, it's Vista. You know, right. It's the same thing. So
June 30th, Microsoft stops selling XP. So
yeah, you know,
this is it. And I saw an article. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal that people were complaining about that. They're saying, "Whoa, we gotta have our XP."
Yeah. So this will be an unpopular opinion, and I'm sure I'll hear feedback on this, but I honestly believe that they need to move on. You know, that
get
Windows
over
Vista,
it. Is that what you're saying? Get over it, folks.
You know, get over it. I mean, we've talked a lot about how easy it is to criticize Windows Vista and how, you know, what low-hanging fruit that is. You know, you mean the big, bad new operating system doesn't run on my 4-year-old computer?
Right.
Yeah, that is what I mean. That's progress. I'm sorry. You know, I don't get it. And, you know, one of the things I just did, I about a week and a half ago, I purchased a tablet PC for the update to the Windows Secrets book, the Windows Vista Secrets book. And I was intrigued to see what the whole Vista install experience would be like on this thing. And, you know, it's been very positive overall. And this is one of the machines I installed Service Pack 1 on. But even before I did that, you know, the thing's been flawless. It's, you know, I had some crap around there that I had to install, but It was fine. It's fine. I don't understand.
The question is it an upgrade?
Yeah.
Is Vista an upgrade from XP?
Yeah, it is. And I would just put that in two different ways. You know, one of the big points about any upgrade is you have to compare it to the old one, and you have to think, while I'm using this older version of Windows in this case, do I miss the newer version? And the answer is yes. There's all kinds of things in Vista. And
What do you miss?
Just aren't in XP. Yeah, and by the way, none of them are necessarily humongous, but they're the types of things. I mean, I kind of bring up the same examples again and again because these things are actually day-to-day productivity enhancers, things that I really do use and enjoy in Vista. So, for example, pop open the start menu. Type the first two or three letters of the application or document you're looking for. Yeah. It just pops up in the start menu. You hit enter and you go.
That's a very
nice feature. It's a little thing.
Yeah, no, but that's a nice feature.
But there's a lot of fit and finish stuff in Vista that it just isn't there in XP. And the other thing too, and you know, this ties into the tip I'm going to have later on, but you know, out of the box, Vista is a lot more secure than XP and requires a lot less work to secure it. You know, you are using Windows, and we have to face the reality of the situation. You know, you don't want to pop a Windows machine on an open network and just go to town. You know, there are certain things you need to do. In Vista, there's a lot less work to do to get that thing prepared to get out into the real world. And I would say just across the board, with especially with wireless security, they've just done a much better job of making it simple and approachable just by normal people. I just think it is better. You know, it's not, I don't know, dramatically better. Obviously, it's in many ways an evolution, but
well, the fundamentals,
that's what happens.
The fundamentals are not the UI improvements, but more secure, more reliable, more efficient, you know, those things. And you say you get all of those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. I mean, you know, I have my main system, the one I was complaining about with you before we started recording. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to wipe this sucker out and install an integrated version of SP1 and, you know, in Windows Vista. It has Vista on it now. It has a pre-release version of SP1. I'd have to go back and look, but it's been running for many, many months. I install a stupid amount of trial software and try things out and kind of uninstall some stuff. So, you know, my systems tend to degrade over time. And, you know, there's stupid stuff in Vista. There's no doubt about it. The Windows forget view styles all the time. It drives me crazy. You know, I have a certain grouping that I use in my documents folder. Three times today, I opened the thing up and it had reverted to some other view style. And, you know, you kind of want to scream at the thing because it just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, it's not perfect. So I admit this. But it is much, much better than XP in the sense that it's a bunch of little things that I think overall add up to something important.
Yeah. Good. Well, get it.
So.
And use it. And, now, you actually had an interesting point to make about sales that. We've been talking about it. We've mentioned it a couple of times. I keep mentioning it that Vista sales are not very good. At least they're not on. You know, they're below the total sales of new computers. But you made a really interesting point.
Well, I'm having a hard time researching one fact, which is, you know, the number of PCs sold in a certain time period from 2001 to 2002. I've been trying to research this. I'm sure there's a very accurate place for this information. I actually would have thought my own website would have this, but unfortunately, the search tool that we use internally only goes back to a certain point, and then beyond that, it's all mixed together, so it's unclear what the dates are. But we do know that, for example, last year, that there were about 260 million PCs sold worldwide, and we know that Microsoft sold about 100 million copies of Windows Vista. So one of the big questions, just looking at those numbers, you think, well, if Vista only went out on 100 million copies, you know, 100 million PCs at most, I mean, and it wasn't that many, because some people bought it, some businesses licensed it separately. So, you know, what were all those other PCs using, and why, you know, why is it doing so poorly? But obviously, you should be going back and comparing what it was like for previous versions of Windows. And like I said, I didn't find the sales figures for actual, you know, PC sales during certain time periods, you know, certain quarters of those 2 years. But what I do know is that the installed base of PCs when Windows XP came out was about 250 million. PCs. And that in XP's first year, Microsoft sold about I think it was 23 million copies of XP, which means that they sold to less than 10% of the installed base. You know, less than 10% of the installed base had upgraded to XP in its first year. Well, we know that the installed base of PCs today is about a billion. And if Microsoft sold 10 million copies of Vista, that means that 10% of the installed base upgraded to Vista. It means that it is as good at, if not just slightly better, than XP. So what's the problem?
Well, but I think people didn't know that. That's probably part of it.
Well, I mean, I think that you need to, I think to be fair, you need to look at that as well as look at the other thing that people will say, which is Microsoft can tout the fact that they sold 100 million copies of this thing and say, wow, this is the fastest selling version of Windows ever, because, you know, XP only sold 23 million copies in its first year. And that, look, and that's four times as high. Look, I mean, this thing's a huge success story. But obviously, if the market's bigger, you know, that figure is not necessarily important. But when you look at percentages of the installed base, that, I think, is more relevant.
Right.
And I just look at this and I think, you know, it's, I still wonder, you know, what people are doing buying the previous version in such numbers. But clearly, that's what's happened every time a new version of Windows has come out, I would imagine.
People are nervous. And you, especially if you have legacy hardware or software. And everybody has heard, and I think this is probably the biggest issue, that there are compatibility issues. And so that scares people off.
And the one thing I would tell people, and I think a lot of people who would be giving advice about buying PCs and so forth, is my advice would never be to install, you know, go out and buy Vista, install it on your existing PC. I don't think that makes sense for a lot of people. My advice would be to go out and buy a new PC whenever you're going to buy it. I don't mean buy it right now. I mean, in other words, you have a natural time period for the life of a PC. Whenever you're going to buy another PC, you just get whatever the newest version of Windows is, obviously.
Right.
I mean, so, right. You know, you'll be happy. Well,
obviously, people are not doing that. And many people are saying, June 30th, we still want to buy XP. Is it mostly business or is it end users or is it both?
Yeah, so that's a question that I have. But if I were going to make an educated guess, 160 million copies of something else were sold, right? My guess is that most of those are going to be XP.
Right.
And my guess is that most of those sales are going to be to businesses.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, businesses did the same thing with XP. They did the same thing with 2000. I mean, that just makes sense.
Well, and it also ties into one of the factoids that Microsoft is giving out around Service Pack 1, which is that, and this is amazing to me, they found 150 enterprise applications that were not compatible with Windows Vista that were literally blocking the deployment of Vista at one or more companies. Yeah. Meaning if even one company came to them and said, we can't deploy Vista until this application works, Microsoft fixed it. So it doesn't sound like a lot in the scheme of things, but they fixed 150 applications. But these are applications that were specific to big businesses.
Right.
And they did it so that these guys would deploy Vista this year. So that's, you know, actually a huge change. And you can sort of see how the types of applications that these bigger companies would run, especially the custom applications that were developed in-house or specifically for that company, you know, those are the types of things that they're going to have weird compatibility issues, you know? And I'd also just point out from a consumer standpoint, if you're Canon or Epson or whoever that makes, like, say, a printer, it's a tough business case to put out a free driver for a product you stopped selling 2 years ago that millions of people are still using and want to use with Windows Vista, but you'll get no credit for doing it. You'll get no money for doing it. You'll get no return on investment at all.
Right. Well, you get goodwill.
Yeah, but that's only going to go so far. The truth is, when it comes to a lot of these products, we're talking about commodity products. You know, when your laser printer dies, you're going to shop around for a laser printer and discover you can buy one for $110 at Dell. And it's not going to matter how great that, you know, HP thing you've been using for 10 years is, because you can get one for $110 at Dell. And that's crazy.
I think that's the disconnect, because I think you're right. I think most journalists, and I'm in that, I'll put myself in that group. We think of this stuff as commodity products. We think people replace it. But I think that there are a lot of people and businesses, absolutely, but even end users, who don't think that way, who say, well, wait a minute, this printer's perfectly good. I just bought it. Why should I have to upgrade it?
The other thing to keep in mind with that sort of argument is, you know, to the user, whoever the, you know, anyone, any normal person on this earth who's using Windows, when something doesn't work, invariably, it's Microsoft's fault.
Yeah,
because to them, what's not working is Windows,
right?
You know, and in other words, they look at this and they say, "Well, Windows Vista is broken. It doesn't work with my printer, my scanner, my speaker, whatever it is. And Microsoft, you know, screwed me over. There they go again. You know, what's going on? I want to go back to XP. I want to go back to this comfortable world where everything worked.
Right.
And really what happened was Microsoft has been evangelizing this thing for several years, practically begging people to put the drivers out so that they would work correctly with the new system. And, you know, a lot of these hardware makers just didn't move very quickly at all and still aren't moving very quickly at all. And, you know, I'm not saying that Microsoft is not at least partially to blame, but I mean, I think that has to be part of this discussion too. It's right. It's not always their fault.
No, in fact, it's an ecology. I mean, it's an environment. There's a whole bunch of stuff. You know, I mean, Yes. It's a whole bunch of people involved in this. There's the manufacturer of the hardware. There's the other ISVs, the software vendors. There's Microsoft. I mean, there's drivers. Yeah. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
I've been saying this for years. I mean, the fact that my PC, which is a Frankenstein's monster of parts and software from thousands of different vendors, you know, boots up, runs, and works every day is a miracle.
Stunning. It's a miracle. I actually tell users, if you want your computer to work like it did the day you got it, don't buy anything new.
Yeah, don't touch it.
That's the problem. I mean, you can't say, I'm going to get a new operating system, but I'm not going to get a new printer. I'm not going to get new software. I'm going to stick with the old stuff. That's when you get into trouble. I agree. Everything should work together forever. World without end. Amen. But that doesn't happen.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sympathetic. I really am. I don't want to buy all new stuff. But I guess that's what people are saying. Keep XP alive a little longer.
Well, I think the problem with the XP thing is that this is a system that really hasn't been actively developed for a long time. Unfortunately, one of the other side effects of Vista's long gestation period is that there was no one at Microsoft working on XP, right? I mean, this thing was sitting in a closet for all intents and purposes. I mean, nobody wanted anything to do with XP.
Right.
No, I mean, really.
No.
If you look, just from a career standpoint, you know.
That's where you don't want to be.
Although, where did you spend your last year? I worked on this version of Windows we put out 8 years ago.
Really? I talked to Bing Gordon, who's the guy who runs EA, and that's a problem they have with gaming. You know, the guys design Madden, and then they want to leave. They want to do the next thing. He said it's a hard thing to find guys who will stay and do the next version of Madden or do upgrades or just maintain it. He said, but there are
just
some
support
people.
Support it. Yeah.
Support it. But there are some people like that who are comfortable with that. That's the position they want to be in.
Even Microsoft's corporate structure is designed so that once an OS is shipped, it moves into a different part of the company.
Right.
You know, the guys who are in the Windows division.
Around. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want to work on this anymore. No, we're done. We're going on to the next big thing.
The last thing you want to see. One more line of that code.
And it was much worse with XP and Vista because Vista just took so long to come to market.
Right.
You know, XP sat there for how long is, I mean, I'd have, off the top of my head, Windows XP Service Pack 2, I think came out in 2004, 2003, I don't know, 2004, let's
Something
say.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's taken them that long to come out with a Service Pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been working on it. In case it's not clear, no active development going on there. You know?
Well, in this case, so, SP3 is a roll-up, right? It's nothing new.
Pretty much, yeah. There's a couple of things, but the point there is that sticking with XP it's okay for a certain amount of time. I mean, they are going to support it with hot fixes and security fixes and all that kind of stuff. But more and more, and this happened with 2000 before XP, it happened with NT before 2000. You're going to see, the new version of the Windows Live Services will come out sometime this year. It won't run an XP maybe, you know, or the next version, you know, and we'll complain. Certain people will complain about that, but inevitably the support has to drop off for that thing. It's old. You know, there are certain underpinnings that just aren't there. It just doesn't have certain capabilities.
We have a Windows Live, Yahoo Live, I should say, chat room going right now. And somebody asked a question, and I think a good point. If you need to kind of force somebody to buy a product by killing the older product, are you not? I mean, shouldn't Microsoft be getting people excited about Vista? And why haven't people gotten excited about it? What happened? I mean, that's the issue, right? People aren't saying, I can't wait to use Vista.
Right. I think that it just took too long. I think it's the same problem. I recall that PDC that I keep talking about back in 2003, how exciting it was. All the advances they were going to make. And when you look at the computing world of 2003. XP was still fairly new. You know, Media Center and Tablet PC had just come out. The Vista stuff was very exciting. And it would have been incredibly exciting if it had shipped in 2005.
Ah.
By the time it shipped in 2007,
it's like, ho-hum.
You know, we've known about this for a long time, and we've been kind of waiting for that for a long time. And great. You know, and really, from a user experience standpoint, it's kind of incremental, isn't it? I mean, it has a start button and a start menu, and it's got a taskbar and a desktop, and it looks like Windows.
Yeah. It's a little more eye candy.
Yeah. Now, they made lots of changes under the hood, you know, important changes that will, you know, figure in going forward and all that kind of stuff. But I've complained about this with the Apple stuff. Fair to complain about it with the Microsoft stuff. That stuff doesn't mean anything to anybody, you know, normal.
Well,
it doesn't matter to my parents that Microsoft re-architected the, you know, the operating system if it basically looks like the old version. Right. So
we're in a position now where operating systems, at least those two, are pretty mature. And you're not going to see
extremely mature.
Yeah. You're not going to see massive shifts.
No, and unless we're ready to move to Minority Report,
yeah, which I'm ready to do. I can't wait to throw things around with my hands.
Yeah,
maybe so, that's what happened to Tom Cruise. And I'm sorry, that's another subject for, for another show.
I was just pondering Tom Cruise the other day. Actually, I saw a Nicole Kidman movie. Oh, Nicole Kidman made a remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which was great.
That's been remade several times.
Yeah, I love those movies. Oh, anyway,
so, I love
it's funny. I was just I was just wondering about Tom Cruise.
Many of us,
as so many people do.
So many people
exactly.
Like, what's going on?
What is up with that guy?
What is that? So let's talk about the big story of the week, which refuses to die. I thought it would be over by now. Microsoft making a hostile bid of $44.6 billion for Yahoo. You know, Yahoo. It's interesting. I mean, I think the Yahoo shareholders, who are getting 62% of value on their stock, are probably going, come on, Jerry, come on, sell the thing. But Jerry Yang says, I wanted to be here my rest of my life. I wanted to make this company a 100-year company. I don't want to be part of the evil empire.
Who does, I guess, unless the pay is right.
Jerry's had his payday. He doesn't need any more money.
He's worth billions of dollars. Yeah. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. The founders are done.
Yeah. Well, I don't expect him to hang around, although a case could be made that him specifically could become involved at the very high level of Microsoft executives.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this.
Would be very interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you, I mean, is some of this Steve Ballmer saying, let's get some new blood in here?
There's been a lot of that going on, and I don't want to get into this too far, but one of the things I've never agreed with at Microsoft is their sort of executive roundtable and, you know, guys that kind of come and go. And I've seen again and again, you know, articles where they say, well, this is the new generation of Microsoft. And they'll point to these guys and say, this guy will be running the show in 5 years. And the guys they point to all leave the company, you know, like Jeff Rakes.
Right.
You know, this guy's been around forever. He's gone.
Right,
you know,
right.
He was supposed to be the next, you know, he was going to follow up right after Steve Ballmer, but, you know, he's not even going to be there. So, yes, Microsoft clearly needs new blood, because the thing that they don't get is this whole cloud computing thing. And the reason they don't get it is because they have these huge monopolies, or at least dominant positions in, I'd say, three markets. And they are so busy protecting these markets that they don't understand that the future is passing them by.
Right.
You know, Microsoft has become IBM, you know, slow moving and really protectionist of their past successes. And this is a company that's going to make billions and billions of dollars every year for the foreseeable future. But if they don't get moving on this stuff, they're going to become less and less relevant.
So Robert X. Cringely wrote an interesting column today, his PBS column, I Cringely, in which he said that his thought was maybe Microsoft wants to be kind of like GE. Maybe all of those golf games Steve Ballmer played with Jack Welch inspired Ballmer to build, and you know, in some ways this isn't a bad strategy, build a company like General Electric that has arms in so many businesses that it's kind of insulated from the ups and downs. Maybe is that, do you think, I mean, remember Microsoft's borrowing money to buy Yahoo. This their war chest,
which is
not
a first. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't deplete their war chest. They now have more money to spend. Mm-hmm. Cringely says, I think you're going to see more acquisitions along the same lines.
You know, that's interesting. And I guess I sort of agree with it. I also saw an article today. I want to say it was in Business Week, and I don't remember the man, Ari, can't pronounce his last name. I can't nor remember it off the top of my head. But one of the columnists at Business Week Online wrote sort of an open letter to Steve Ballmer where he said, you need to step back, forget this, and simplify. You're doing too much. You know, you're getting into too much. You're losing the point of Microsoft, you know.
Well, that's the question. Should they stick to their knitting and be an operating system and a software company? And they have, Ballmer keeps talking about these four divisions. You've got desktop, you've got enterprise, you've got entertainment, and servers.
And online.
Online, that's right. Yeah. And maybe they should stick to that. On the other hand, Microsoft's business is not growing. Maybe they should be looking at other businesses.
Well, Microsoft has, if you look beyond the core stuff, and actually the very core of Microsoft has always been Office and Windows.
That's all they've ever made money on.
Right. Until recently, I would actually say that they have three now. I would put server almost at the same level.
Good business now.
Yeah. Server has, but server, I mean, it's not a very big jump to go from Windows and Office to Windows and Office and Server. It's a very logical extension of what they had been doing for 20 years. So, but now you hit a point where now it breaks off, right? And you can look at trends and you can say things like, well, mobile devices are going to be huge. The internet is obviously huge. Getting into video games, I have to be honest. I mean, I love this stuff. I'm really interested in it. They could have just taken a complete pass on that, and I mean, they would have been better off financially.
Aren't they making money now on it, though, or is that
no? They made a quarter or two of. I mean, you know,
they had
made
their
a profit.
First quarterly profit. Yeah,
then they may have their first quarterly. Yearly profit, but you know, their entertainment and devices division has been awful.
Right.
I mean, it's done horribly, horribly bad.
Right.
You know, their attempt to get into the Zune stuff is obviously not done.
It's investment, though. So you could make the argument, sure. Well, they're investment mode. They're not ready. They're not trying to make money yet.
Okay. They're doing a good job of not making money.
They're trying to get in the living room so that they can eventually make money.
Yeah. Well, as you've noticed, an Xbox 360 in the living room is not necessarily such a good thing.
No. I like that cardboard box, though. I'm really happy about that.
It's quiet and cool. Putting a PC in the living room, also not a good thing. You know, they have a coming generation of media center extenders that will kind of do that. But, you know, we've done this before. You know, this stuff, getting the computer stuff out to the TV, obviously it's going to happen. Lots of companies are working on it. Microsoft should have a piece of that. But I look at Microsoft and I think they're a software company, you know. That's what they should do.
Yeah.
And if there's software to be had, I think the cloud computing stuff is as obvious of a transition for Microsoft as the server business was. And the problem with it is they have just really struck this thing right in the knees. Every time they try to get up and run with something cool, someone protecting the other businesses has struck it down. From the earliest days of Internet Explorer, when Brad Silverberg desperately wanted to get Internet Explorer away from Windows, it was dragged back in. Right. You know, they killed NetDocs, which was the early online office suite. I mean, there's a million examples of them just killing stuff to protect their core businesses. And I don't know. Maybe the solution for Microsoft is for it to become a couple of different companies that do different things.
Well,
I don't know.
Isn't a reorg imminent? I mean,
yeah, a reorg. But come on, they do a reorg every 8 months. That doesn't. Right.
They need to do a serious reorg.
Yeah, they do.
Dvorak's been saying this for some time. They need to be a couple of different companies. Maybe four different companies. You know,
I think this is the thing we lost with the antitrust trial is if they could have broken this company up. I mean, it would have helped shareholders a lot, but I think it would have really created two or three companies that would have competed really strongly with each other, and it would re-energize these people, and they would have done more exciting stuff. And really, if you look from 2001, let's say, till today, what have they really done? A lot of evolution.
Right. Here's the real issue, and I'm seeing this and hearing this everywhere, is that nobody from top-line management to the people on the ground at Yahoo wants to go to Microsoft. It's a fate worse than death for a lot of these guys.
Well, okay, so I don't think anyone's going to Microsoft, right?
I would, good news, well, guys. No. You don't have a job.
No, I don't mean that. Actually,
they're going to be layoffs no matter what. They're going to be some big layoffs. Yeah,
yeah, but you know, this is a chance to separate the wheat from the chaff back in Redmond, too.
I mean,
what they should do is keep whatever Yahoo's properties in Silicon Valley are, keep those as their online operations. Can keep the Yahoo name, run it as a separate entity. It should not be affected by anything Microsoft's doing back at home. They should decouple it completely. And I think they should, if Jerry Yang gets down, I think he'd be a great guy, even potentially to run Microsoft at some point. I mean, I really think they need to do what they can to integrate Yahoo where it makes sense, but also keep them separate so that when they come up with the next great cloud computing thing, it's not killed by someone in Windows.
Yeah.
You know, as has happened in the past.
The Windows division has had too much, they deservedly, but they have a lot of power there.
Yeah.
They call the shots.
This is going to sound like it has nothing to do with the topic, but, you know, in the presidential elections that we're going through right now, the Kennedys Ted Kennedy very specifically came out for Barack Obama in Massachusetts.
Right.
And then Clinton, of course, won the state. And right. People said, well, that's interesting. You know, we thought this guy had a lot of influence. And I think what we're seeing with the Kennedys is that as time goes on, their influence is kind of waning. And of course, the Kennedy name will join other famous names from Massachusetts past. It's something right. We're all sort of familiar with, but they're not necessarily actively involved with the data. Yeah, their history. And I think that that's where Windows is right now. That unless they make they still make a lot of money, they're doing great in some ways, you know, some bad perceptions out there about Vista, obviously, but they still make a lot of money. But I really think that their influence is waning.
Wow.
And I think that influence is waning inside of Microsoft, and I think it's waning outside of Microsoft.
But here's the interesting thing.
That's the thing they need to realize.
Who replaces it?
Well, that is the thing. I mean, so
there's no heir apparent.
Yeah, well, that's mostly because they've been so mild in their approach to the online stuff because I really think even the Windows Live stuff, it's good, but I feel like they haven't gone full bore because they've always got this Windows thing behind them.
Yeah,
you know. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't have answers. I just have criticisms.
That's why it's good to be a pundit.
It's the beauty of my job.
I love being a pundit.
No, I don't know. But I mean, I would say there's some healthy signs here, too. I mean, I like how aggressive they're being. I mean, I've complained about Microsoft rolling over. They changed Vista to appease competitors in ways that, frankly, outrage me. And it's nice to see Microsoft finally standing up. And whether this Yahoo thing is a good idea or not, I mean, this is an admission, isn't it? You know, we haven't done a good enough job. We need to do something big. And I like that. I mean, this is something maybe that's overdue in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's going to be very interesting. I think, you know, right as we speak, the Yahoo board is meeting by phone. They're not notorious for moving quickly on anything.
No.
But I'm sure there's...
there's well, by the way, that's another issue, right?
I mean...
What do you get when you, put two zeros together? I mean... That's a potential issue. I mean, I don't know.
It's not exactly a dynamic company here.
No, and that's sad. I mean, that's too bad because
there's no reason not to be.
Yeah.
You know,
neither one of these companies has really done anything with search. Both of them have sort of lackluster ad engines. Both of them have stellar email services.
They're dominant. I didn't realize it. Calicanis told me on Twit that they dwarf, both of them individually dwarf Gmail. I thought, you know, because all the digerati use Gmail, but really Yahoo Mail and Hotmail are totally...
Well, Gmail is also fairly new in the sense that until a year ago...
Right, wasn't even open.
You couldn't even get in there, unless you got an invitation. So I think that stuff's going to even out. And advertising through email is going to be a big channel for revenue looking forward. Advertising via instant messaging probably will be as well. I sort of get nervous at all the ways they're going to be able to put ads in front of us, you know, ads on our mobile phones, you know, ads in our video games,
ads in our podcasts. Speaking of which, absolutely. We'd like to thank audible.com for supporting this podcast. Wow.
Weakest segue ever.
Wow. Well, I got to work with what I got to work with. Doing my best here. Audible, of course, is, the ultimate audiobook company. We just love them. 10 years in business. They just got acquired by Amazon. I think there's an acquisition that makes a lot of strategic sense. I think they're going to be just wonderful. And I'm sure that one of the first things Amazon does is start getting more and more books. Already 45,000 plus titles on there. If you started today, read a book a day, you'd be dead before you'd finish. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's... That's a pleasant thought.
It's an advertising
slogan. I think I will do that and prove you wrong.
you read a lot of Audible books. So do I. I'm in the middle of one that Megan recommended on Jumping Monkeys, The Keep by Jennifer Egan. I love. But I want to ask you this. Do you ever watch the TV show Dexter?
Yes, I do.
Do you love it?
I like it. I you know that they're bringing it to normal TV, right?
Normal TV?
Or, you know, non-cable
TV,
right?
That's terrible.
So, I know. I'm actually curious how they're going to do that because, yeah, of course, it's
pretty
a
pretty gruesome.
Fairly gruesome show, yeah. So anyway, so...
I know many people who are... You know what? I've never seen an episode, but I've just downloaded all of the episodes from iTunes because I'm going to put it on my new... I just bought an iPod Touch, the new 32 gig, yep. And I want to load it up with shows. And Amber and a bunch of people I know just like are Dexter fanatics. So this is for them. The original Dexter novels are written by Jeff Lindsay. He is really good. And if you haven't, you know, if you're watching Dexter and you want to see the real Dexter, I think the oldest one, the first one, I don't know if it's the first one, but it's one of the early ones is Darkly Dreaming Dexter by Jeff Lindsay. It is available in Audible. You know, it's just as gruesome. I mean, this guy is, he's a serial killer, but he's working for the good guys.
Interesting. I didn't realize there were books.
Yeah. They only got three of them on Audible. I'm not sure how many total they are, but I tell you, what a great way to get introduced to the Dexter series. I'm going to listen to the books, then I'm going to watch the TV show. I invite you to get your Dexter free. Free Dexter. Come on and get it. All you got to do is go to Audible. Let me make sure we're moving everybody to the new URLs, which are Audible Podcast. I'm typing it in right now. Podcast.com. And then /windows. Let's see if that works for you.
Podcast.com?
Audible Podcast. Yeah, it does work. Audiblepodcast.com/windows. That's the new URL. And when you get there, you can sign up for Audible, get a credit for a book absolutely free, and this would be a great choice. Darkly Dreaming Dexter. I hear you typing and downloading already.
It works, but I can't. I'm not eligible.
Oh, yeah, me neither. I know. Once you're a member, you can't take advantage of this. This is for new members. If you're already a member, just keep listening to all the Twitch shows because we have great book recommendations on every single one of them. That's one of the most fun things about this for me is sharing all these wonderful books. You've been recommending great books, Paul, and I try to find good ones. We have many of the hosts are Audible users, so it's really great. If you're into listening, and obviously you are, listen to books too. It's a great way to fill your iPod, your iPhone, your Kindle, whatever portable device you have. It works on everything except the Zune. I don't know why. But it doesn't. Audible.com. Is that weird? It should work on the Zune. I think it's a Microsoft thing because, I mean, it worked on the Kindle right out of the box.
They told me they were working on it. And then in true Zune fashion, they've dropped off of the face of the earth. So I don't know what they're doing.
What's the story? Audiblepodcast.com/windows for your free book. We do thank them so much for their support. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for.
We're leaving.
No.
Oh, no. We've got more.
No,
sorry.
You can't leave. You've got a tip and a program to recommend.
That sounded like a threat.
You may not leave, Paul. You must stay here.
I must speak the truth.
Speak the truth. You can't handle the truth. Oh, I'm sorry. That's another Audible book. You can get that, by the way, A Few Good Men on Audible as well. I'll talk about that another time. So what is your tip of the week?
By the way, I just downloaded Jericho and from iTunes and watched that on an iPod Touch.
Oh yeah, is it
going
good?
Back and forth. Yeah, I like the apocalypse type stuff.
Me too. Yeah, you and I are end of earth kind of guys.
Yeah. So you have to see Jericho. I can't say that it's, you know, the greatest show on TV necessarily, but it is end of earth TV.
I saw the first episode and I loved it. That was a freebie on iTunes.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, I did the same. I did the same thing.
So now there's a whole season.
There's a whole season in there now. So
I've got to see it.
And if I'm not mistaken, the second season is starting any day now.
Oh, great.
On TV. But anyway, I like watching them in a big batch, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I don't watch TV anymore. I just download or get the DVDs. And it's so much. It is. It's more, I've been watching The West Wing like eating chocolates. I through two or three episodes a night.
So speaking of things you could do until you were dead, yes. You know, they could stop making TV right now and I could just exist on these DVD series for the rest of my life. And, exactly. I would never watch everything I want to see. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Who needs the writers? They wrote.
So that wasn't actually my tip, but
What is your tip?
I'll throw that out there. Okay. Well, so it actually ties into something we were talking about earlier, which is just get secure, which is basically that out of the box, Vista does include a two-way firewall, anti-spyware. It's got a secure web browser. But the one thing you really need that's not in Vista, and I'm really confused by this, but you do need it, is antivirus. And basically, if you're running Windows Vista and you just want to quickly secure your system, you should be downloading some kind of antivirus program. And that doesn't necessarily mean one of those big suites, although certain people like that kind of stuff.
It definitely doesn't. Those things are...
I'm not a fan. Yeah, not a fan personally.
Not a fan.
I prefer and do use AVG, which I know we've talked about in the past. If you go to free.grysoft.com, there's a free version of AVG antivirus. I think it's fantastic. There's also something called ESET Nod32 antivirus, very similar. You actually do have to pay for it. There's a 30-day trial, but it's supposed to be even more friendly to the system, you know, even less resource intensive than AVG. So I'm testing that on the tablet system I was discussing previously, but I don't see a huge difference. So I think either one of those would do a great job.
Have we ever met before? Do I know you?
What's better? What did I do?
I just want you to know that I did not pay him to make that plug. ESET is a big sponsor of the radio show. Nod32.
Oh, well, it's going to get weirder when I get to my software of the week, because it's like a Seinfeld episode. Everything's going to tie in together.
I have to say, we did benchmarks with Nod32, okay. And it does.
Oh, you did?
It is
better.
Okay. Significantly so. Now, I haven't tried it on Vista yet, but on XP, even faster than AVG, which I've recommended for years. I mean, if you're going to go free, that's the one to get. But no, there's nothing even close. Nod32 is very lightweight on resources, and it's very fast, right? I mean, it's very effective.
Oh, it is, yeah. Yeah, I like it a lot, actually. Yeah. I like things that get out of the way. You know, there's not a lot of pop-up stuff, and you can turn off all the pop-ups if you want, which is fantastic.
Right. Which I do.
It is good.
I don't
want
to see it.
For the record, we had never discussed this. I didn't.
I'm so
didn't
happy, because people sometimes say, oh, they're an advertiser. They pay you. Because I love this antivirus, and I recommend it.
Some people, this happens very rarely, but every once in a while, somehow an ad will tie into something that's on the article, as if they were tied together. It just happened to load that time.
No, yeah.
It's like, oh, no wonder you like this product. Yeah, I know anything about who's advertising. Yeah.
Well, you and I are of the same mind as far as this goes. We realize how important it is that we ethically be absolutely clean. I mean, people can't think that we're influenced in any way. I don't get the ad money directly. It goes to my the radio station. I'm a big fan, and I was really glad when they asked to advertise.
Oh, I make no mistake. I could be bought and sold like a piece of newspaper.
But you tell people.
But I would tell you if it happened. And,
yeah, I'll let you know. I'll let you know when I cash
Listen,
in.
Listen, I would go away forever for a very small amount.
They say everybody has a number, you know.
Yeah, my number happens to be very low.
Very low.
When it comes to security, though, the other thing I just wanted to mention is if you are using a client-side email program like Outlook, you should probably also consider some sort of anti-spam. And I don't actually have a recommendation on anti-spam, but I do have a little bit of advice, which is one of the things you can do is make sure that the email service you're using is doing anti-spam up on the server and antivirus and all that kind of stuff. And if for some reason you have a custom email server, you know, I have like a throt.com type of thing. I don't know what they're using on the server. You can actually pipe that email through a service you know is protected, like Gmail or Hotmail Plus. And those services all have a facility where it will grab the email, and then you can get it from those services instead. And that way it will pass through all those filters up in the service. So I happen to use Gmail for that purpose. Mm-hmm, you could use other things. It's, you know, a kind of a way to get anti-spam without having to install anything on the client. So that's one way to do it. And the other final bit of advice when it comes to Vista security is a lot of people will provide advice and recommendations about getting rid of user account control. And I can't stress enough that you should just leave that alone. Whether or not you think it does anything, it doesn't really matter. The one thing that you should know about user account control is that it's annoying for about the first 30 days, maybe less, depending on how you install things. And then it pretty much goes away. You really don't run into it on a daily basis after you've installed all the stuff you're going to use on the machine.
I agree with you. And I think I remember seeing studies early on that Vista with UAC is much more secure. It really is locked down. And without UAC is no more secure than XP. So it really, that's a key part of the security.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the software that we got, it's funny, I didn't really have anything dramatic or new, and I was kind of looking at my system and I was thinking, you know, what what do I use regularly that would be of use to people? I've talked about media players, you know, the past couple of weeks and so forth. And, you know, it's funny to tie everything back in together with the Audible Amazon thing. My software pick of the week is actually Amazon MP3. And this is service, obviously, if you go to AmazonMP3.com, where
love it.
Amazon is offering music from all of the major labels. It's DRM free. It's an MP3 format. It will work with anything, you know, iPods, Zunes, whatever you might have. And if you download if you do this on the PC, they have a downloader that will automatically download things to your PC, but will also synchronize it directly into iTunes or Windows Media Player optionally if that's what you want. So if you, it's similar to the way Audible works on Windows, I'm not sure about the Mac, but if you use Audible software to download things from Audible, they'll actually push it right into iTunes for you.
Right.
You don't have to do anything. And Amazon MP3 does the same thing. So it's a great source for legal music. It has all the major labels. There's no DRM. You know, the software is pretty lightweight. It sits there in the background. And when you download things, it will pop it into the media player that you're probably already using. And you can sync it to your iPod or whatever device you may be using.
And they're high bit rate. They're unprotected.
Yeah, 256K.
That's great. And almost everything's on there. I mean, I'm blown away by the selection.
It really is great. Yeah, it is. I think prefer the Apple stuff for the movies, but for music, I'd have to say the Amazon stuff is amazing.
I've kind of retrained myself because, you know, it's so ease of, you know, buying is kind of key. The fact that you can click a button and buy. And so I'm really used to doing that on iTunes, but I'm really have retrained myself. No, wait, check to see if Amazon has it first. Why would you buy a lower quality copy protected version if you can get it cheaper, cheaper on Amazon?
And for whatever it's worth, especially for Windows users, if you're looking into TV show seasons like we've discussed earlier, or movie rentals or movie purchases, it's worth comparing the two because it depends on what it is. I noticed with Jericho, for whatever reason, it was actually cheaper on iTunes than it was on Amazon, but that's not always the case. Sometimes the reverse is the case.
Yeah. See, because it doesn't work on the Mac, I usually don't buy stuff. So you're talking about Unbox.
Yeah. I actually buy and rent a lot of stuff through Unbox because it works through the Xbox 360 and
I didn't, I have to try that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have been using Xbox Live to buy stuff. I wish they had more choice. Because that's very convenient.
I need to get going on that. I've written up some stuff lately about digital movie purchasing and renting, and a couple of people come back and said, "Yeah, but what about, you know, Xbox Live?" And the truth is, I don't really do that, and it's kind of a silly reason. It's just the Xbox in our den doesn't have a hard drive, so I don't actually think in those terms. You know, I can blast stuff out to it over the network from the PC, but I don't think of sitting there and downloading to the device. So that's something I need to test going forward.
Can I throw in a little software pick?
No, we're done, Leo.
Okay, thanks a lot, everybody.
What do you got?
Oh, I got a mention. Well, I don't know how you feel about this program, and I have mixed feelings about it. I just want to mention it's free. It works with Vista. IBM is offering Lotus Symphony for free now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. I mean, it's word processing, it's spreadsheets, it's presentations.
Is it out of beta?
Still beta 4, have to say, I mean, it runs fine on my Vista installation. It looks pretty good. Supports ODFs. That's the new document, open document.
I think it's cool looking, and I haven't looked at it since, I want to say, beta 2. I downloaded at least two versions of it.
Right.
It is really attractive. I like the notion of someone, I always, you know, Star Office always seemed like they'd be the ones to do this, but take OpenOffice and turn it into something beautiful.
Right.
You know, that's the one thing. I mean, I think there are two big issues for me with StarOffice or any of those products. One is just that it's a little too unfamiliar. A lot of the key combos aren't the same, which, you know, for someone like me who's, you know, just works a certain way, it's hard. But the other thing is just, you know, OpenOffice and StarOffice too, frankly, just aren't attractive looking. You know, they're not refined.
Right.
And I'd say Symphony, whoever's doing that, Lotus,
now, is it based on Star Office? I mean, what is the...
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's based on the OpenOffice stuff.
Okay. So it's their version of it.
Yeah.
I see.
But it's so much nicer looking than any of the other versions. I mean, it is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd mention that. Just in case you've used it or you like it and you wanted to, you know, try it or whatever, it is free. Java-based. So I guess that makes it possible to run on a variety of...
So this runs natively on Mac as well, does it?
You know, I don't think they do a Mac version. They do it on Linux. They do it on XP. They do it on Vista. For some reason, they don't do it on the Mac. The Mac is so swamped with word processors.
That's true.
You know, I have Office 2008 for the Mac, and it's nice. I don't feel like I really need it. I've got so many other good choices, specialty tools and so forth, that I stick with
it. Doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Doesn't do anything for me.
No.
Paul, it's been great talking. I'm glad. You know, I'm sorry we missed last week. We'll be back next week, unless you're traveling. Are you on the road anywhere?
Yeah, but not until Friday. So okay.
Let's get together Thursday and we'll have a show for you Friday. We thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. I think it's kind of funny that Yahoo created a streaming video service right after Microsoft made the offer called Yahoo Live.
Right.
Hello.
They might want to trademark that name before it's too late.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, I guess you probably can't trademark live, but whoa.
Yeah.
But we were using that today, streaming video and audio of the show, just to try it out, because, you know, I use Ustream and Stick'Em too. And while it has been a little buggy in the past, it seems to be working quite well. It's a nice little interface. We've got a great little chat room going and so forth.
Well, too bad they'll soon be out of business. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that's nice. Thank you, Yahoo. And good luck in all your future endeavors, right if you get work. Okay. I'm Leo Laporte for Paul Theroux. Don't forget, Paul's online at Supersite for Windows. That's winsupersite.com. He's also the news editor for Windows IT Pro, and his great book. Buy it now, because then you get a low-cost upgrade to the second edition. No, nothing.
Yikes.
You get nothing.
I don't know.
Because you need it now. Windows Vista Secrets with Brian Livingston. It's available from Wiley & Sons, and it's a much, much better book than those other ones.
And a much nicer person than those other guys.
Yeah, he deserves it. Hey, thanks, Paul. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
All right, thank you.